Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th of August, Anno Domini 2011, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we got news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-JAZZ. 0415. Our news of the week, like you didn't know it was going to be this. We've had an earthquake this week. We're getting a hurricane. But for the tech community, there's an even bigger disaster. Steve Jobs has resigned as chief executive officer of Apple. The company has promoted chief operating officer Tim Cook to the position of CEO and said that Cook will join the company's board of directors. Jobs will become Apple's chairman. Allow me to read you Steve Jobs' resignation letter. To the Apple Board of Directors and the Apple community. I have always said that if there ever came a day when I could no longer meet my duties and expectations as Apple CEO, I would be the first to let you know. Unfortunately, that day has come. I hereby resign as CEO of Apple. I would like to serve if the board sees fit as chairman of the board, director, and Apple employee. As far as my successor goes, I strongly recommend that we execute our succession plan and name Tim Cook as CEO of Apple. I believe Apple's brightest and most innovative days are ahead of it. And I look forward to watching and contributing to its success in a new role. I have made some of the best friends of my life at Apple, and I thank you all for the many years of being able to work alongside you, Steve. The person best suited to replace Jobs is another person who is very much with Jobs' program. Luckily, there is one executive who has actually filled in for Jobs as CEO twice. That would be Tim Cook, Apple's chief operating officer. It's interim chief executive for 2 months. In 2004, when Jobs was recovering from cancer surgery, and again in 2009, when he got a replacement liver. We don't know the state of Jobs' health at this point, but we all wish him the best. Our prayers and thoughts go with him. So, if you go to our website, which is soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you can, in fact, go to our poll of the week, which is, how do you think Jobs' resignation will affect Apple? The choices are: Apple will be destroyed, after a rough spot, Apple will be fine, doesn't mean a thing, and I don't like these choices, I'll put something in the opinion. So far, we've got 40 people. Most of you think it doesn't mean a thing, or after a rough spot, Apple will be fine. Three of you think Apple will be destroyed. And I know that you all have more to say, and in fact, that's one of the choices here. So what you need to do is, after you have voted in the poll, check the yellow box underneath. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to another website, a truly great website, where you can, in fact, enter your opinion. And so far, we've got seven people who have done that. You can enter your thoughts there. And, of course, please, what are your thoughts about Steve Jobs' resignation? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We're not just interested in questions. We're always also interested in your opinions.
There were a couple of interesting points in the resignation letter that some of the blogs were pointing out, that Steve said we should implement our succession plan. Was it 6 months ago, a group of shareholders tried to sue Apple, demanding that they have a succession plan, and Apple said, we're not going to talk about that. And basically, we've already done that, and you don't need to know.
Right.
And then the news came out a couple of days ago that Tim Cook, the now the CEO, his signing bonus for becoming CEO, 1 million shares of Apple stock.
Which are worth what? About $385.
Yeah, almost $400 million. But he has to wait 5 years to get the first vestment, half of it, and then 10 years to get the second vestment. So yeah, that's $400 million. But yeah, it's going to take him 10 years to get it, and who knows by then what it's going to be worth.
Well, right. It may not be worth as much, or what might be worth a whole lot.
Well, I didn't check the specifics because sometimes they vest at the current price they are now.
Right.
And sometimes they vest at the price they are then, when they actually vest.
Well, and that, which that is, would be an interesting indication of his confidence in himself and the board's confidence in him.
Yep.
So, yeah, like I said, give us a call if you've got opinions on Steve Jobs stepping down. We'd be interested in hearing them. The blogosphere is absolutely flipping nuts about this. The Apple fanboys are all in mourning, like he's already dead. He doesn't look good.
No, he's lost a lot of weight.
Especially a lot of these retrospectives that have been popping out that show you Steve Jobs over the years, you know, and the products that he's come out with. You can really see, you know, his health take a downturn.
Well, there was a picture of him just recently in what looked like a black dress. I'm not entirely certain what he was wearing.
His trademark black turtleneck that you couldn't see the bottom of?
No. You could see his whole legs and feet and everything. And,
oh, yeah?
And I honestly thought it was Photoshopped.
Black jeans.
He looked that bad. No, they stopped at the knee, so it was hard to tell. I'm sure it was black cutoffs and a black sweater, but it honestly looked like a dress. Obviously, it was just hanging on him.
Yeah.
Really where that was. I mean, it was so, he was so thin, it was pretty terrible to see. All right, our first caller is Chris from Gates, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Yes, fellas, I had a archival DVD made of some pictures, and with it, it came thumbprints, and they all look good. I loaded some things up on Snapfish for my sister. They all look good. But when I play them on my DVD, and my big screen TV or my laptop, they look terrible. Now, I've taken it to my office laptop, and they look fine over there. So I guess I'm wondering, what am I missing on my... I have an HP Windows 7 Pavilion one-year-old laptop, and I don't know why they wouldn't look good there.
Could be the graphics.
The video driver
mm-hmm.
is a possibility.
The DVD driver.
DVD driver, too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How much memory is in this laptop?
750.
No.
Well,
no, not disk space, memory.
Yeah, memory. 4 gig, 8.
I got as big as I could get, so probably 6 or 8. Probably 6. It's probably 6.
Well, okay, but in addition, that doesn't tell me much about the TV. If you're playing it, are you playing it through the computer onto the TV, or is there a DVD?
No, I'm just saying on my laptop it doesn't look good, and also from the DVD connected to the TV it doesn't look good. But in my office, it looks fine. It plays great, and that's why I'm wondering. There must be something on my laptop or my home DVD that...
What operating system are you running at work?
XP.
And at home?
7.
Huh.
But like I said,
that's exactly the opposite of what I thought
yeah.
it would be.
It looks fine.
Do other DVDs play okay?
You know, I don't even think I've played any other DVDs
it
on
might
my
be
laptop.
Something to try.
But here's the other thing,
it
though.
It could be the DVD video playback codec could be a lower quality codec
also,
on one versus
with
the other.
Office computer that could have its own dedicated graphics card. Whereas if this laptop has a built-in shared graphics, in other words, it's sharing the memory with the system, that's not always, you know, granted it does good, decent quality, but sometimes...
Right, that doesn't explain the TV, though. If
TV?
You go right from the DVD player, is this the DVD player in the laptop, or is it a separate...
No, this is like a separate DVD you have connected to your TV that I thought, well, let's just play it on the big screen TV.
Right, so it's
thing.
Just a regular DVD player.
Yeah.
What it sounds like is that, as Steve said, the codec, the thing that decodes the bits on the DVD and turns them into a picture is called a codec.
Okay.
And it sounds like you that at home and... On your laptop and on your DVD player, the codec they're using isn't quite up to snuff as much as the one at work. Now, for your laptop, you could probably simply upgrade it. It would, again, as Dave says, it does depend a lot on the graphics card in your machine. But If you're having exactly the same problem on a dedicated DVD player to your TV, then I'd have to say it's probably the codec.
So it would be better for me just not to do the archival, even though I can get more, and just stick with the CDs, because the CDs look fine.
Well, the other question is this a video DVD, or is it a computer DVD with pictures on it?
You just go to Target, and they said, here, try the archival DVD. You can put more on it than a CD. So I did that.
Well, that's just
really
DVD versus CD.
Are.
Yeah, DVD versus CD. That has nothing to do with archival. Archival is usually the material that the disc is made out of. You can get archival CDs, and you can get archival DVDs.
That's what they're calling it, anyway.
When you look at the disc in your computer, is it individual JPEG files, or does it have something called Video TS on it?
I'd have to double check.
Yeah, that would tell
you
whether it's just pictures, which should be fine on any computer, or whether it's a video DVD that would depend on the video playback software in your computer.
When you're looking at it, does it automatically forward to the next picture?
Well, that could be an auto-run slideshow of the pictures, not a DVD player.
Like I say, I have the thumbprints and that you normally get with a CD, so that's why I was thinking it was more like a CD, because I have little pictures of every thumbprint like you do when you...
Yeah, that doesn't matter. CDs and DVDs are identical in function and design and format, just DVDs have greater capacity.
I have a feeling that it's more of a DVD, because I think I saw something about Media Player or something like that, so it wants to run some kind of like a DVD program.
So it may be a video DVD. Yeah, typically
it should play fine in the DVD player.
In the DVD player, yeah. Depends on how they encoded the pictures.
The problem here, Chris, is that we're making a lot of noise without actually seeing the product.
Yeah, I understand, guys. I just didn't know if there was some simple thing, because it did work great one place and just not so great other places. So it's like...
Yeah, there's a lot of variables.
Well, then know that the pictures are good.
Yes, and that's why I have them, just, as a backup.
Right.
So the thing to try is update your DVD player software in your computer.
Okay.
You may need to update the codec. Depends on which DVD player software you have installed. But that's something to try doing on your computer that isn't working well.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes... and the other thing, of course, is probably you cannot upgrade the DVD player.
Right. See, that's what makes me think it maybe it's JPEGs, and the player is trying to do its own slideshow, and it's not scaling the pictures right.
Yeah, it's possible.
Maybe it's playing the thumbnails and blowing it up to full screen rather than playing the full quality versions.
Right. I don't know. It's hard to know. All right. We will go back to the phones, and we will talk to Marie in Chi-Line, New York. Welcome, Marie. What's your question?
Hello. My computer has been showing, I have a laptop, 5-year-old laptop, it's been showing lines, the picture basically goes away and there's vertical lines up and down all over the screen, and at the same time the cursor freezes when that happens, and sometimes the cursor freezes even when the picture comes back or prior to that happening.
It's probably not the cursor freezing, it's the video freezing.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is usually the video cable failing. There's a video cable that runs from the bottom of the laptop on the logic board through the hinges up into the screen. And over the years of opening and closing the screen, that cable can wear out.
The screen could be going, too, with the lines.
Yeah, could also be
they lose pixels.
Plug in an external monitor and see if the same thing happens. Yep. And that will let you know whether it's the video card or the screen or the video cable.
Now, the video cable is something that's inside of the laptop?
Yeah, it goes from the bottom half of the laptop where the logic board is
to the top half. You can't see it. It's in the hinges. It's hidden in the hinges.
And since it goes through that hinge, you're always opening and closing the hinge, and it flexes and stresses those cables, and then they wear out over time.
I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but the hinge makes a creaking noise when I open and close it now.
Well, it could be related, particularly if the thing's been pinched at all. But 5 years old, you've opened and closed that hinge an awful lot, and it just might be time.
Arthritis of the hinge.
So is this repairable, or is it?
Oh, it's always repairable. It just depends on how much it's going
to
cost.
The first thing you want to do is, if you can, like Steve was saying, if you can go to a desktop and unhook the external monitor and hook it up to your laptop to see if you still see the lines. Because if you're still seeing the lines, then that means it's the display that is getting ready to go.
Well, if you see the lines on the external monitor, it's the video card in the laptop.
Right, right.
And so that's usually a whole logic board replacement, $400 or $500 or more.
Oh, okay.
And the screen replacement is $1,000 or more. So really, at this point, it's much more cost-effective to pick up a new laptop. I'm sorry to say that.
You almost have to hope it's the $20 cable, but it's the 3 hours of labor to tear both halves apart.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Laptops really, unfortunately, most of them are not designed to be repaired.
Okay.
In any way, they're just not. I mean, they engineer them to be as small, as tight, and frankly, as inexpensive as possible, so that they get a because everybody wants smaller, lighter, faster, and cheaper.
Yeah. And right now, you win because with the going to back school sales that are going on, you know, they've got some great deals out there that you can shop around and get quite a bit for your buck.
Yeah, so usually what happens in that situation is you put a monitor on the laptop and just use it as a desktop machine and ignore the internal monitor.
Yep. If in fact, the external monitor looks good. But you may well be looking at a new machine. And 5 years is about average.
Yeah, it's had pretty light use. So, you know, I was a little surprised to think it might be going, but... I guess you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Time to buy a new machine.
Okay. And by the way, I think Apple is going to be okay. You know, I think I'm sure there's strong people there that are going to keep the company going well.
I think you're right.
And several of the blogs were pointing out that there's probably, you know, 2 or 3 years of products already under development that Jobs has had his hands on.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Ive, the, you know, the chief designer, he's been the design visionary that's implementing Steve's ideas, and he's still there.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is Tim Cook has been the operations manager. He's the guy that gets things done.
Right.
So Steve has a vision, Johnny Ive designs it, and Tim gets it done.
Yeah.
So now Tim can get it done at the higher level.
All right, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
Thanks, Marie. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's all happening right here on your station. 7x24, 365. It's Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
Hi. Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. As Hurricane Irene barrels toward the eastern seaboard, the Department of Homeland Security is warning government agencies and private companies to be on the lookout for storm-related phishing attacks and other malicious cyber activity. In an alert issued Thursday, the agency said that cyber criminals go into overdrive during highly publicized physical events such as hurricanes and earthquakes. Both government agencies and private organizations could possibly become recipients of malicious activity, most commonly in the form of socially engineered spear phishing emails, the alert from the DHS National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center said. These emails may appear to originate from a reputable source, with the email subject closely aligned to the event and usually of interest to the recipient, it said. Network administrators and general users should be aware of these attempts and avoid opening messages with attachments and or subject lines related to physical events. Clicking on such emails could cause malware such as keyloggers and remote access tools to be downloaded on the user's computer, it said. The alert is a sign of the growing attention of the that the DHS, which is responsible for protecting critical infrastructure targets in the U.S., and other security agencies and organizations have begun paying to phishing attacks. Over the past few years, phishers have increasingly taken advantage of natural disasters and other highly publicized incidents to slip infected emails and other malware onto users' desktops. The speed and sophistication of such attacks after the devastating earthquake and tsunami in Japan earlier this year is but one example. Barely hours after the Japanese tragedy, after the Japan tragedies, phishers and other online scammers began using emails, fake websites, and malicious downloads to try and steal money and plant malware on user systems. Similar scams were observed in the aftermath of the earthquake in Haiti. So as much as your big-hearted self wants to help, as much as you just cannot help opening every email you receive and clicking on every link they contain, just stifle yourself, as Archie Bunker would say. Don't open them, and for Pete's sake, don't click on any links they contain. Just don't, okay? How many of those emails have you already clicked on? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. You know, I've already gotten a couple of these myself. I got one from my dear friend John, who is stuck in New York and needs me to immediately send him $500. $500.
Is that all?
Yeah. I think he's buying a plane.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know. Same day airfare might be.
It might be $500. The problem is I don't know anybody named John in New York City. I don't know anybody named John who was traveling to New York City. John is an astonishingly common name, but oddly, I don't have that many friends named John. And none of them are actually in New York City at this moment. So I'm assuming, and even if one or two of them were, they don't know me well enough to ask me for $500. They could phone home and ask their wife to send it to them or get it out of their bank accounts.
Well, it's right up there with the ones, and they still keep coming. Oh, I've got this great deal, you know, I'm representing this person who is over now in Ireland and Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
It's got $12 million, and it's ready to go, and if you would, you know what? Those scams are so old, it's pathetic.
You know, oddly, and this may come as a shock to many of you, but there are international banks and international banking laws. Any human being on earth could put money into an account in Ireland or Kuwait or wherever, and maybe not in Kuwait right now, and get it to a bank in America without a single problem. They don't need your account to do that.
Did you hear about the international crime gang that stole $13 million from a bank out of their ATMs? They acquired prepaid like Visa cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Hacked into the banking software to eliminate the limit on the card.
Nice.
And just went to ATMs and started withdrawing money.
Nice.
$13 million from one bank. They didn't even go to other banks. They just went to that one bank and sucked it dry.
Yeah, they don't actually...
It must have been a bunch of ATMs for that one bank, because I doubt a single ATM would have $13 million in it.
No, you get... and many of them have limits.
Well, they eliminated the limit.
On the limit of what you could withdraw or what was on the card?
Both.
Oh, very nice.
Holy.
Very nice. I had that happen once. I was out actually in New York City.
It's a Florida-based bank, and they sold the now unlimited prepaid cards to fraudsters in across Europe, the Russia and Ukraine. But $13 million overnight. It was a coordinated attack. You know, so at this day and this time, go now. So, and it was Saturday night, I think it was. So that it was a Florida-based bank, which is closed for the weekend. That was a pretty good haul for them.
Yep. That actually happened to me once. I was out with some friends in New York City. Took some money out of the bank. Went to another bank, took some money. I went to another bank, took some money out. Suddenly realized I was way over the limit of what I should be allowed to take out.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to about a dozen different banks and did that. And then on Monday morning, I went to them and said, there's something really wrong with your software. I should not have been allowed
to do this. It's per transaction and not per day? Maybe.
Well, that's just it. It says $200 limit per day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taken out well more than that. And the guy said, that's not possible. So I dumped all the money on his desk.
And showed him all the receipts.
And yep. I said, really, this is not my money. This is your money. I don't have this much money in your bank.
Yeah.
I'm an out-of-work actor, which is really a redundant phrase.
Yeah.
And so I don't have this much money, but you kept giving it to me. There's something wrong with your software. They were really apologetic. They didn't even – they put back all the money that I had in their bank, even though – I mean, I legitimately, I suppose, could have kept that out, although I would have redeposited it.
Yeah.
They took back all their money. They were very nice about it, and they said, we'll fix this. Thank you. Yeah. But it was, you know, it was thousands and thousands of dollars,
yeah.
And I simply did not have that much money in their bank.
Why not?
Because I was an actor.
So the transaction limit was wrong, the daily limit was wrong, and the balance check was wrong.
Exactly. It was all wrong. And so, they were most amazed that I, in fact, gave them back their money. I said, well, I know. I suppose we could have gone to court, and legally I might have been able to keep that money, actually.
Yeah.
But.
Well, then they charge you overdraft fees. And.
But, I didn't want to go through any of that. I just wanted them to understand that they seriously screwed up their software.
Yep.
And I said, and you know what? You guys need to do some checking, because I can't be the only guy who figured this out.
I ran into something similar Monday morning trying to leave on a business trip. I tried to get some cash out before I left, and there was $1,000 missing from my account. No, it was a Friday afternoon. So Monday morning, back before the banks were open on weekends, Monday morning I call the bank, and, well, the money's back. And there's no indication of where it went. So the nearest thing we could guess is that Friday night's paperwork, somebody at one of my branches somewhere mistyped a digit. And took the money out of my account instead of the other account.
Or borrowed $1,000
for the
weekend.
And then that transaction got caught and adjusted later on. So I call them, oh, yeah, the money's gone from my account. And they said, no, it's not.
Oh, I got to tell you my adventure. This week we took my daughter back to college. Saturday I left here. I was going to get my free oil change from where I bought my car. And on the way, I'm on 104 and my tire just goes, boom, gone. I mean, it just shredded. So I called them. I said, look, I'm going to be late. And by the way, I want a tire. We had a little discussion about that, but they finally found me a tire. God love them for that.
What? It's a brand new car, right?
Brand new car.
That's why you buy a brand new car, so you don't have payments and repairs.
Yeah, you have payments, but you don't have repairs.
Well, yeah, no repair payment.
So the guy from AAA comes and puts the donut on. I'm certainly not going to drive all the way. To my daughter's school.
You have little tiny tires on that car now. What's the donut look like?
I know. The donut is this great big.
I was going to say, that gets it up. You know, so
tire, yeah.
Three wheels are down to normal size, and the donut's bigger.
Yeah. The guy says, he shows me the tire. The entire inside is shredded. He says, oh, you've got a broken spring. Then he looks under the car and says, no, you don't. What must have happened is a slow leak. So we looked at the tire, and there's a big nail in it. So a slow leak caused the tire to flatten, which caused it to bulge out, which caused it to rip against the spring. So I got all that fixed, and we went on our trip. And then we just had some amazing adventures in the rain. But most of the trip was great. But, you know, I want to thank the guys for where I bought my car for doing a yeoman job. Getting me back on the road, because there was no way I was driving, 1,000 or more miles on that donut. Just wasn't happening. So that was great. It was an amazing event. Because here I am. You know, actually, thank God it happened when it did. I would rather have had it happen Saturday afternoon
than
on the road on Sunday. But I could see my exit. You know, and with my eyes, that meant I was really close. I could see my exit, and they were just off the exit. So, if it had waited another 3 minutes, I would have been pulling in when it happened.
Or just roll into it, yeah.
Exactly. But the guy who came, he said he spent the entire day on 104, just going up and down fixing tires, from AAA.
Somebody must have lost a load of nails.
Yeah,
or
whatever, yeah.
Or you see folks carrying, debris.
Yeah, it could have happened
there. From a construction job, shingles and that type of stuff.
So he, God love him. He was like, the toughest part of his job was actually finding my job, was finding the little key because there's a lock on the...
I had it happen
on
the spare tire thing, yeah. On my minivan, I had a flat tire, AAA came. They couldn't find the spare tire. I've got third row fold flat seats, so that takes up the space where the spare tire usually is. We finally found it under the center passenger door on the minivan.
Huh? What?
Yeah. I couldn't find where the tire went.
That's amazing. Oh, mine is under. Mine is up underneath the car.
Wait a minute, Steve.
I don't think it's a very safe
place.
Well, if
it's under the
RTFM?
We looked in the manual. Couldn't find it.
Really? The manual doesn't even
tell you? Instructions on how to change the tire, but
now where
it was.
Stored?
Remove the tire from its storage location.
It's probably different.
Where? Right. Because the rear seats fold into the space where you would normally put your spare tire under the rear of the car. That put it in the middle of the car.
Yeah, right. But it's under the car, and I don't think that's a safe place for it. You're driving along, kicking up stuff, and damaging the donut.
My old pickup truck I used to have the bolt was just a single steel arm holding the tire
underneath.
Off. The bolts rusted. When I needed to get the spare tire off, I couldn't.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, forget that noise.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, that's, of course, why I let AAA do it. God bless them.
Yeah.
A burly young man who just had a power tool and vroom, vroom.
I sometimes feel bad about that. You know, I can change my own tire, but I don't want to.
I can.
Especially, it's a work day and I've got nicer clothes on.
Right. I'm old and I have arthritis.
Yep.
I'm not going to be kneeling in the dirt anymore.
Yep.
Not if I can afford to have somebody else do it for me. The guy was great.
One time I was trying to change my own tire, and the lug wrench wouldn't fit on the lug nuts.
What?
The wrong wrench got put in the car, and it was like 2 in the morning. I was able to get under a street light so I could at least sort of see what I'm doing. Couldn't figure it out, so called a friend, picked me up. We went home for the night. Came back in the morning, and I realized
car was gone.
No. Covers on the lug nuts that you have to take off first. Just to make it look pretty.
Just to make it look pretty, exactly. It's not important that you can fix the car. It's important that it looks good while it's dead.
Definitely.
Well, now it's all the wheel covers are plastic, and you got to take that wheel cover off to even get to the lug nuts. And there's fake lug nut lugs on the plastic wheel covers.
Right. I have a cube. We don't have any of that stuff. We barely got an engine. But
that thing is roomy.
I love that car.
You could throw a party in that car.
It's peppy, too, when you don't have your daughter's entire closet packed on top of the thing.
But, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. She actually took much less this year. Last year, we packed. We've got this.
Wait a minute. That could be a problem. You still better take a U-Haul back down there, because if she went down there with less, you could come back with more.
No, she admitted that she brought way too many clothes, way too much stuff. Stuff she didn't even use. Stuff she didn't even use. The Ustream is up.
Well, the live camera's up. I had some pictures circulating.
Oh, that's lovely. The live Ustream is now up. Steve upgraded the Lion, and apparently it took a while to figure out.
In case folks want to really be afraid to see what's going on.
Hi. Okay. We're up now, so if you're on Ustream, you can see us there.
I tested everything last night, and it worked fine.
Sure.
I did. I really did.
But you moved it.
Yeah, I came here instead.
If we had come to you, it would have still been working. It's a computer. It's not supposed to work the second time. All right, listen, this is silly. We're just going to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can give us a call. You know, the number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Doug did, we'll be back with him when we come back on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Doug from Pittsford on the line. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a HP laptop running Windows HP Service Pack 3 Media Center Edition. Now, every time I start the computer, it boots up to this black screen with some basic icons for choosing various multimedia things, like playing a DVD, playing music, looking at pictures.
Yeah.
Is there a way I can make it bypass that and just boot right to the normal Windows desktop?
It sounds like, was it Windows Media Center Control? Simple View is launching by default.
Yeah, I guess that's how I describe it, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a way to make it not do that?
In the preferences somewhere of that program, it should say whether to launch or not. Let me see if we can find it on Google here.
I've searched around a little bit. Didn't
you can at least go to, you should be able to go to MS Config and disable that process from launching, but that's sort of the clutch
to do. I think I tried that, not with MS Config, but I used something from SysInternals.
Okay, what you want to do, are you using, what version of Windows are you running?
XP Home.
Oh, XP, it's different in XP, son of a pup.
Okay, here's,
and it,
oh,
it
this
didn't
is an
always
Windows
do this
7.
Either, so something changed, but I don't know.
What updates have you done lately?
Well, it's on automatic update, so should be up to date with whatever the latest are.
Yeah, under... Oh, man, under Windows 7.
All right, here's how to automatically start it, and maybe in that instructions we'll have how to not start it. So it could be a shortcut in your startup folder. It could be a command line in your MS Config. This is all for Windows 7, though. It's similar.
I'm looking on the start menu. In the startup folder, it's empty.
Okay.
When it's in Windows Features under Windows 7, but I don't really know where it is in XP.
If you do a Properties on Windows Media Center, so find the Windows Media Center shortcut,
well,
or even the program itself, and if you do a Properties on it, there's a Start In and a Run command where you can tell it to run in full screen mode. So that's, we're finding instructions on how to make it do that all the time, and so you just do that backwards and it won't do it. There should be something here to tell it not to do that.
Where would I look? Would I look in program files for the Windows Media? Oh, here's a Media Player, Media Connect.
Yeah, there should be a Windows Media Center program.
Unfortunately, there's like a dozen programs. Windows Media Center Extender Service, Windows Media Center Receiver Service. I'm getting an echo. Windows Media Center Schedule Service.
There should be a program specifically called Windows Media Center.
And
that should be under your program somewhere.
No, you should be able to find them in if you click on Start and Run and then type in services.msc.
Yeah, to find the actual process name.
When it boots to this, there's no other choices except what it allows you to do. I mean, you can't. I guess I've never tried doing Control Alt Delete to see if I can bring up the task manager.
There should be a quit command to quit the Media Center program.
Well, you can continue on. There's an icon, like a Windows icon, you can click in and it boots to the login or the desktop.
Yeah, but you want to avoid having to do that.
Right. I mean, it's. Yeah.
There's command line switches where you can tell it to do different things, turn the animations on and off. So it must be something in your registry telling it to start on boot. If you might be able to check in MS Config and see if it's there. But
well,
yeah, we don't know the name of the process that it actually creates.
You need to do two things. You need to go into that services.msc, like I said, and disable everything that starts with Windows Media Center. You then need to go into MS Config, click Start, click Run, type in MS Config, and hit Enter. Go to the Startup tab and uncheck every entry that starts with EH, which is the Entertainment Home So, for example, EH Tray and a couple of others. Write down everything you unchecked in case you uncheck the wrong thing.
Right. Now, if you mess around with MS Config, you always get those messages at startup that say, you know, that warn you that you're starting with a...
Yeah, you can check the box that says don't warn me again.
Does that undo whatever changes you did?
No, it just doesn't warn you that you made changes.
Oh, okay. The message is kind of unclear to me.
Yeah. I found a link with a bunch of different things to try for XP, different command lines you can put in, different places to go to look for this program, because it's got to be in your in a startup folder somewhere or in a registry run equals program somewhere to tell it to do this automatically. So I'll post that link, and there's a few things you can dig through.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not an add-on. It's not an application that you can remove. Media Center is really kind of its own operating system. You have to turn off the Media Center MCE. I don't know what the MCE is, but that's... It's just not...
Right. Still there?
It's a task somewhere. Okay. Yeah, if we knew the name of the task, then it would be easier to stop to find it and kill it.
I could restart.
If you go into the Media Center itself...
Excuse me?
If you go into Media Center itself...
No, that's a question. Doesn't seem to be a way to start it.
It should be a program in your program folder.
Well, it should be right at that beginning. One of the choices should be settings. And in settings, you should be able to just say don't start at startup.
Here's instructions for Vista to make it not do that.
Would they apply to XP, or is it referring to things?
It's probably a little different. You go to start... click on tasks, click on settings, click on general, startup and Windows behavior. Yeah, that's a Vista only thing.
That's Vista.
There's a start Windows Media Center when Windows starts is a preference in there somewhere. So we just got to find the XP version of this document.
Right. I'm sorry. This echo is making me crazy. I'm sure it's your phone, but basically the somewhere in the Media Center itself. There is a settings section, and I believe that in there you can tell it not to start at startup. But I don't know exactly where that is because I don't have Media Center in front of me, and XP Media Center I honestly have not looked at in about 6 years.
Right. Okay, well, I guess I could offline. I'll restart and see if I can find out what the task is that's running, if there is one task or if it's the whole...
Well, like I said, go into settings.
You can always stop that task in the services.
Easiest thing is if they've given you that option in settings. And that's really the best way to do it. That way you're not shutting down something that maybe you shouldn't shut down.
Right.
Okie doke?
Okay. Lots of things to try. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
The problem is we're really getting to the point where it's hard... at this point to really do Windows XP stuff. More and more places are actually starting to take down their Windows XP help. I don't know why. I think that's stupid. Just leave it there. Why not?
What it takes is disk space.
All it takes is a little disk space, and there's not that. It's not going to take that much of it.
We just read that IBM is building a 130 petabyte disk array.
Yeah.
Just for grins and giggles.
And why not? All right, our next caller is Steve from Walworth, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, guys. I have a Windows XP Service Pack 3 desktop machine that won't finish booting up. The icons don't, I don't get the all the icons up, and the taskbar at the bottom is a dark blue, and it's got the... horizontal bars, but there's no information in there, and it sits there and doesn't go any further. I can go down, move the mouse around, I can click in the taskbar, and then it brings up the hourglass, and then it just sits there.
Can you get into safe mode?
I can get into safe mode.
And do a restore from there?
I can't seem to do a restore. I put in the original Windows XP disk.
No. Here's what what you want to do is not a restore, a recovery. What you would do is if you can get into safe mode, you would click on the start bar, go into the control panel.
Restore point.
Date?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and try going back a day or two.
Well, actually, I have to go back 2 months because that's the last time I turned on this computer.
Well, then go back to that point and then just have it do a restore.
Yeah, something's corrupt somewhere in most likely in the third-party add-ons because the Safe Boot just does the Microsoft stuff. You can go through MSConfig and turn things on and off a couple at a time and see which one is causing it.
Yeah, I tried that. That didn't seem to work. I ran CheckDisk and it reported errors, but I'm not sure how to fix it or what the errors were. It just says disk has errors.
Well, okay, there's two things there. I was going to suggest hardware problems, particularly if the machine's been off for a while and maybe in an environment that could cause it to have problems. But what you might do is download two programs from the web. One is Memtest 86. We've both got both of these listed on our site, Memtest 86.
Yep, I've got that. I also ran SpinWrite, and it reported everything was okay.
And yet the disk still has errors?
As reported by CheckDisk.
If it's that old of a machine, the hard drive could be going on it.
Yeah, well, it was running pretty slow the last time I had used it, and I had installed a second copy, a trial version. I didn't like it, and I removed it, and then it was acting funny.
How old is the machine, actually?
You said it's been 3 years old.
How many?
3 years.
What you might want to do, if you don't have any data on there that you really need to get off...
Not really, no.
Well, you can probably get it off in safe mode.
But I reinstalled the... I have my disk is Service Pack 2, and I got Service Pack 3 in there. Can I reinstall Windows over Windows from the CD?
That may not do it. What you may need to do is reformat your hard disk to map out all the bad sectors on the disk.
Right.
Okay.
When you go in, that's the last
resort, but I was hoping that I'd be able to fix something and then at least finish booting up.
Right. If you've actually got a disk that you can do it with, put the disk in, boot it up, and tell it it's a brand new installation. And you don't want to save anything that's on the drive, reformat it and go. That may fix the sectors that are bad. It may, during the testing, it may tell you where the real problem is. But if you don't have data that you need to keep on that machine, that's probably your best bet at this point.
No, I don't have data, but I had programs and stuff that... I just hate to reinstall them all, but I'll do that.
Programs. Well, you'll have to do that anyway, if you reinstall Windows, usually.
Yep.
And at this point, if what's corrupted is the registry, you want to reinstall all your stuff anyway.
Yeah. Because you're only going to be asking for more issues.
Okay.
Yep.
Sounds good. I'll reformat and reinstall.
Let us know.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. That's one of the real problems that the average user has, is you don't know if it's a hardware problem or a software problem, because we, the average public, doesn't have the diagnostic tools.
Yep.
And so you end up with a guess and a prayer. And maybe you lose an hour or so, turn the TV on and watch it while the drive is rolling. And if it works, you win. And if it doesn't, hey, it was a fun hour anyway.
CheckDisk/F will fix the repairs it finds, if it can.
Right. Right. The real problem, of course, is that in an attempt not to overwhelm the average user with technical jargon, most computer programs, and certainly Microsoft is guilty of this as well, in their programs, don't give you enough information.
Yeah. CheckDisk is a higher-level tool. It checks for cross-link files. It checks for directory errors. SpinWrite is a low-level tool. It checks the actual sector itself. And so the fact that SpinWrite said that the sectors are okay is a good sign, and CheckDisk is finding directory errors is a higher-level problem that you may need to erase the hard drive to fix.
Right, exactly. SpinWrite is great at the low-level stuff, but it certainly is not going to be the thing that fixes some of the higher level problems, like Steve said.
Yeah, so. And if a Windows file is in a corrupted directory entry,
right,
that could explain why it's not finishing booting, because it's trying to get to that file and can't find it or get to it, and it's corrupt. And reinstalling Windows may work by putting that file in a different place on the hard drive with a new directory.
Well, or if in the midst of installation, you tell it reformat the hard drive, the theory is it'll map out any bad sectors while it's doing the reformat. All right, we're going to take another break. This will be a slightly longer break because there's so much to tell you. But we'll be back for an entire another hour of this nonsense. So stay tuned. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And apparently you don't have a lot to do today because you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't forget to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And we are Sound Bites, and we are right here on the truly great, but you know this already. Why do I even have to tell you? We are member-supported. Jazz 90.1. Back in just a couple minutes.
Computer Talk Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Do we have somebody on the line? No?
Maybe.
Wait a minute.
Hang on. He's got another button to push over there.
He's having button trouble, I think.
There's so many buttons, not enough fingers.
He's having the buttons. Linda's looking very happy that he's having trouble with the buttons this time.
I've got this thing potted all the way down, and it's still playing music over the air.
The music hasn't stopped. There it goes. No. But at least you can pot it down now.
Yeah.
How weird is that? Be careful of that one, Linda. So do we have somebody on the line?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Who we got?
Oh, I'm sorry. Carl from Pottstown.
You took it back.
Yeah, Pottstown, PA.
Carl.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay, I have a question about texting. I realize texting is very popular today, and I'm a little bit embarrassed to say that I've done none of it so far. So I have a question about texting. I'm a newbie.
Yeah.
I listen to the radio, and the one radio program says you could text the host, and then they give a 10-digit number, including area code, to text the host. And
sure.
I listen to another radio program, and they're running a contest, and they say, text this phrase, whatever it might be, to, and then they give a 6-digit number.
Short code.
So it seems like you could text to 6-digit numbers and text to 10-digit numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering how this works and why there's a difference there.
Well, the short codes, as those 6-digit numbers are called, are a feature of texting that you pay for. So it's not a regular phone number. It's attached to a regular phone number. But by giving you only 6 digits, the assumption is more people will be willing to text it. But that process, that feature, costs you money, and it can cost you an awful lot of money depending on where you get your short code from. But the 10-digit number, the regular phone number, works in fact perfectly well. So you can use either. They essentially end up in the same place. What a number of places do actually is they have programs at the back end of that short code. You can now do the same exact thing with Google Voice. I run a couple of things. Soundbites has their own cell phone number. And you can text the word define. You text help, and it'll tell you everything you can get. But you can text the word define and an acronym, and it will either tell you the acronym or tell you it doesn't understand the acronym. I've got 400 or 500 tech acronyms in there right now, so it won't do you much good if you send it a medical acronym, but there are a few hundred, four or 500 tech acronyms in there right now. And essentially Google Voice catches the text message, and then I have a program that checks it regularly to send back the answer to somebody. But a short code is just a special version of a phone number that you can buy from a phone company.
Okay. Well, that explains it. Thank you very much.
Sure.
One of the things that to keep in mind now, especially if you have younger children with natural disasters, quite often Red Cross and other emergency services will say, you know, text at whatever to donate $10. That comes out of your wallet. There were a lot of stories after. There were a lot of stories after the Haitian earthquake where kids were saying, "Oh yeah, I texted Haiti to Red Cross 100 times. That's a lot of money for them." And you know, your parents have to pay for that, right? What? No, they never said that.
Yeah, it comes out.
So now, a lot of times, you start standard text messaging rates apply, and a lot of the cell phone services will waive their text messaging fee if you're messaging a charity like that, but. But you got to be careful, and that money still comes out of your account. You're donating it to a cause, but you end up paying for it. No, that's a new one.
No, I get that.
Okay.
Our next caller is Dar from Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dar. What's your question? Dar, are you there?
Yep. And it's applicable here. There's a application for Android. It's called RunP.
Yeah?
One word. R-U-N, P as in Peter, double E. And it's what the register calls it is golden moments of cinema. It tells you when to pee. When you can pee so you don't miss the
action. Yeah, I've heard of this, run pee. It's a listing in movies, so here's a boring bit, you can run and pee.
Oh, jeez. TMI.
Yeah, I think there's an iPhone version, too.
Yeah, that's what it said, yep.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Available at runp.com.
And have you used it?
No. Don't do any biking anymore. No more murder cycles for me, so the kidneys are a little bit better shape.
Yeah, right.
You don't have a Milwaukee vibrator?
Yeah.
Second thing, and this is more important, for flats, for slow leaks.
Yeah.
Go to the jobber and get Gunk brand puncture seal. There are others similar ones on the market.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
This stuff is amazing. Had aluminum rims on the Bronco too, and there was a slow leak, and knew that puncture seal worked on steel rims. And figured, well, what the hell? You know, this thing's got two nails in the sidewalls, inner and outer. What have I got to lose?
Right.
The thing held for over 7 years. Sold it with those nails in it, and that was the only wheel that didn't lose any air.
Wow.
Anything, wow. You know, if you ran over a bunch of nails in that, there's a very good chance a puncture seal would get you that extra 3 minutes.
Yeah. Had I known there was a leak, but I'll buy a can, I guess, and I'll stick it in my trunk. Thanks, Star. That's a great piece of advice.
Last piece of advice, speaking from experience.
Yeah.
Make sure that the stem is on at noon, at 12 o'clock position. Otherwise, you'll get a faceful of it.
Because it blows back when you stick it on?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Cheers. Gotta run.
Thanks, Star.
Gotta pee. Bye.
Yeah. Man, I went to see Conan. The Barbarian.
You're wait, hang on, Dave. You turn your mic back on. He turned his off and got yours too.
Okay, I went to see Conan the Barbarian,
yep.
And probably Run P would have said the entire film.
All my women friends want to go see it for Jason Momoa,
of course,
who's from Stargate, and apparently there's a lot of nudity in the movie. And until I found out it was male nudity.
Right.
So Jason Momoa, he's a big Samoan guy. You know, he's got his long dreadlocks back that he wore on Stargate all the time.
Well, or it's a...
It's a wig. It's a actually, wig. When he was filming, he was in Game of Thrones, too. He did a lot of nudity in Game of Thrones. Like, that's his big thing now, I guess. There were some scenes when they were filming Stargate where he had to put the dreadlock wig on because he had shaved his hair shorter. And I think I read that it weighed like 20, 30 pounds.
Yeah.
A lot of actors wear wigs, and actresses wear wigs all the time on TV shows. Because then they don't have to get their hair styled that same way every single time. We just put a wig on, and it's already pre-styled for you.
Many, many actresses that I've known over the years have very short hair personally so that they can wear a wig.
Yeah.
And then whenever they go on any show, they've got a wig. The stylist can make it happen while they're doing something else, and they put it on and go out on stage.
Yeah.
It's a much better deal.
After the question, the 45th anniversary of the first... picture of Earth as a whole,
right
from the moon, and so there were pictures on the net, and they were talking about it was 1966. It was a mechanical camera, because it was 1966. It had real film in it. It took the picture, developed the picture, had an analog scanner in the picture to scan the image and then radio transmit it back to Earth. So it was an analog fax machine. So, oh, this is pretty neat. So I'm looking at this podcast that a lot of the blogs were pointing to. It's built by Kodak.
Of course it was.
They have one at the Eastman House.
Yep.
And the Eastman House did the video podcast explaining all this cool stuff about this camera.
Cool.
Said they made 10 of them. They have number 7 at the Eastman House that didn't actually fly. But it was it printed really, really long strips that then got transmitted back to Earth and were reassembled into these giant pictures. They said they just wanted to take some pictures of the moon, but they ended up mapping the entire moon's surface for the lunar landings, but then turned it back and took some pictures of the Earth, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really neat.
You know, I joke about Rochester being the hub of civilization in the Western world, but
it is.
So many things were invented here. And that have changed the course of our lives. It's quite amazing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
I got a comment. Did anybody last night on the Oprah Winfrey Network see Life 2.0? It's all about Second Life.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
It's on channel 436 if you got digital cable. It's called Life 2.0, and it talks all about Second Life, how to start, all these people. It's, hold on a minute, I thought you guys surely would know about this.
What was
you
it called
know,
again?
I,
Life?
I don't watch very many things on the Oprah Channel.
Hold on. I'm doing this as I'm talking to you. It's called Life 2.0. Anyways, it's on channel 436, the Oprah Winfrey Network. I saw it last night. And 436.
There's they have a trailer on their website.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to scroll through some time. Okay. I just wanted to know if you guys saw that. And I've got a question for you. I've got a smartphone, and I bought an app. Now my question is, how can I buy apps without putting my credit card on my phone? I got a funny feeling that if I ever lose my phone, people can buy apps like crazy off my phone. Is there any way I can buy an app off my computer and not have the credit card on my phone?
Well, on both the iPhone and the Android, when I've used them, the credit card information is kept on the server. For example, at Apple, it's kept on Apple's server. Mm-hmm. On Google, it's kept in Google Wallet on their server. When you log in, so far, the way I've seen it is every time I buy an app, I have to put in my password. So as long as that password is secure, that is to say, obviously not password or 1234, you should be fairly safe.
Yeah, well, because I bought an app last night, and they didn't ask for a password. They just said, "Do you want to buy?" They brought up my
credit card
with the last four digits on there. Oh, that was another thing I wanted to ask. Oh, okay. gentlemen, if you've got Oprah Winfrey Network on Wednesday, 8:31, on 8:30 p.m., Life 2.0 is on.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, so I got one more question, then I'll hang up. Do you guys have a password to get into your smartphone?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
And a new study shows that the most common password is 1111, followed by 0000, followed by 2580.
No, I got my own number, but I just wondered if that would be safe for me, because I don't have one on there, and I'm just wondering if that is, if you guys have that. I'm just saying. Curious.
Yeah, no, I've got the password, plus if my phone was ever lost, I can log in on my computer, totally wipe that machine out, and lock it so nobody can use it.
Okay, yeah, you
Dave,
run a program called
what's
Lookout.
What's the name of that program?
Hmm?
What's the name of that program that you have?
I use one called Lookout.
Yep.
I've got Lookout. I paid for it. Yeah.
You can do that.
Yep.
You should be able. One of the things is you can go to mylookout.com.
Okay.
Log in with the username and password you gave them when you signed up.
Right.
And from there, you can find your phone.
Yep.
One of the things you can do is, like, if you lose it in the house, you can have it scream at you. You can track it. You can wipe it. You can lock it.
Oh, yeah, I've got that on my phone. I love it.
There you go. So
you're all set.
What you want to do now is at the computer. Don't do any of these things, because that would be bad, but go familiarize yourself with what's
available
at mylookout.com.
Yeah, I know. I've done that. I also got a thing called, Ultimate. I'm drawing a blank now. It's called, wait a minute. Okay, quickly. I forgot what it's called.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Anyways, but, okay, so the best thing to do would be to put a password. Do you think a password or a pattern would be better?
It depends. If you put it, unless you wipe your screen frequently, the oil from your finger will show the pattern you use or the keys you hit.
And since it's usually only four characters, it's not that secure anyway.
Right. But either one of those is fine.
In fact, I read about
it's certainly better than nothing.
Well, I read a blog from a guy saying that he counted how much times it takes him to type his code in, on how many times he has to do that in a day, and it's, you know, he wastes many, many minutes a day typing his code in. So he
believes security is a waste of time. Good for him. I want to find his phone.
Okay, it's called Juice Defender Ultimate. It saves battery life.
Yeah,
excellent.
It's a great program.
Excellent.
See? Boy, you guys are great. You know.
Thanks, Linda. We got to take a break.
Life 2.0 on Wednesday at 8:30.
I will definitely check it out. Thank you so much. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We are Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Hey, this will be exciting for most of our listeners.
Oh, wait a minute. Before we go into that, got to get folks all psyched up.
Because
you know what next weekend is?
Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But what weekend is it?
The weekend after this one.
The weekend before Labor Day.
How about the Labor Day weekend is coming up, folks.
Yes, it is.
And for us, that means?
We get a day off.
No.
We get 2 days off.
No.
3 days off.
No, we get to celebrate starting 22 years.
22 years of
bliss.
Bliss is the word I would have used. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to the end of our 21st year on the air. There are people who listen to this show who are younger than the show. And we will be starting our 22nd year next Saturday. Well, soon. Very, very shortly. And so we want to, you know, just, again, this show wouldn't exist without you people. We could sit here and blather about all day. But without you folks listening, we'd have been off the air a long time ago. So
yep. And
it is you who did this. who kept us on the air, and of course to Rob Linton, who resurrected us from limbo. Mm-hmm. And gave us a home. But Rob's on a cruise somewhere, so we don't really care about him right now. But it is you people who have kept this show on the air and made it what it is. And I just personally want to thank each and every one of you for getting me off the streets on a Saturday morning.
I mean, you know, that's quite a feat for us. 22 years. Wow. Longer than my first marriage. And we haven't, the three of us haven't filed for divorce yet.
It's unbelievable.
I was joking with my wife a couple months ago was our 16th anniversary. You know, we've been married 16 years. You've been married for 30 years, but we've been married for 16 years.
All right, here's the exciting thing for most of our people who are a bunch of cheap such and so's. Apple is poised to release a cheaper iPhone 4 in September under new CEO Tim Cook, who's been CEO for, 2 days, in an attempt to win over customers from their rivals, while BlackBerry has also announced plans for a more affordable BlackBerry Curve. The new 8-gigabyte iPhone 4 will be smaller than its predecessor, as Apple looks to gatecrash the lower-end smartphone market dominated by Nokia, according to rumors reported by Reuters, who were in correspondence with Apple suppliers. The move echoes the company's release of smaller iPod products in the middle of the last decade. Once the iPod was established as the portable music player of choice. I thought this was just a bottle of water, but apparently there's something more in it. Meanwhile, a new BlackBerry 7 operating... Did I grab the vodka bottle by mistake?
Could have.
Meanwhile, a new BlackBerry 7 operating system will support Research in Motion's new Curve phones that feature updated processors, displays, and memory. President and co-CEO at RIM, Mike Lazardis... Professor Lizardo. The new BlackBerry Curve smartphones offer a significant performance upgrade. The release of the Curve 9350, 9360, and 9370, available through Vodafone in the UK in September, will hope to reinforce the company's popularity with young users who can already communicate on the cheap using BlackBerry Messenger and email once they have their handsets. Samsung has already announced the intention of increasing its share of the crowded market by offering more affordable smartphones and moving into the emerging markets, all of which can only be good for the savvy consumer. This, of course, comes on top of Google having bought Motorola Mobility, so we'll see what kind of inexpensive smartphones come out of there as we come along. Our question to you, of course, smaller, cheaper iPhone, can you resist? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Of course, BlackBerry just released their music service, so now you can get your music on your BlackBerry. I'm trying to find the price on here. It was a weird price compared to other services.
I've been in the Google Music beta, and once I finally uploaded all my music... finally uploaded all my music. I can now listen to it anywhere.
Cool.
It's pretty amazing, actually. As long as you've got, obviously, unlimited data, you can listen to it anywhere you like. All of these services, of course, use data. So if you're one of those people who is not on an unlimited data plan, time to switch carriers, frankly.
Or go to places where you can get free Wi-Fi.
Free Wi-Fi. Right.
I tap into that a lot and don't even touch most of my data plan.
And most of the rumors from inside the cell industry is that all carriers are going to stop their unlimited plans.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. But then you've got the dichotomy of companies like Google who are predicated on you using those as much data as possible. So we'll see how that goes. I did... In driving my daughter back to college and on the way home from that this last week, we listened to Pandora entire trip.
Did you check your data usage for the trip?
No, it's free. I didn't check it, no.
Yeah. Even though, you're not paying for it. You're paying flat rate. It'd be interesting to see how much you actually used.
Yeah, I should do that. But I didn't even bother. It was just...
The BlackBerry tablet? Still isn't getting very good reviews.
Apparently, it shouldn't.
HP canceled their tablet. 6 weeks after they announced it and like a week after it started shipping or something like that.
I still say tablets are going to be the hot item this year for Christmas.
Well, it's what's interesting.
It's going to be one of the hottest things
there's
going.
Been a lot of speculation and blog entries about what can the PC companies do to compete against the iPad, and why wouldn't you just buy an iPad? And HP, the touchpad and WebOS were highly regarded hardware. The OS was really great, but HP killed it. Mm-hmm. Fire sale at $99, sold out in seconds.
And there are a bunch of people I know who bought one or two or four, and they're all working at putting Linux on them.
Yep. There was a
Android.
There was a story that HP put WebOS on an iPad, and it ran way better than it did on the touchpad.
I don't doubt that.
And which, because WebOS is basically WebKit, which runs already on the iPad in Safari, so that was interesting. But a lot of the bloggers are thinking that Amazon might have a good shot at it, because they already have the music service and the shopping service and the book service.
When Google will come out with one.
Yeah, how much? Oh, that was one of your stories too. How low a price can these other tablets go?
Well, the reality is, and we might as well talk about this now.
Yeah,
this is the Amazon thing. The fire sale of the HP touchpad and the resulting rush to snag the tablet proved one thing: if it's cheap enough, they will come. This could be good news for Amazon, who reportedly plans to release its own tablet in late September, early October, for, and I quote, hundreds less than the iPad. Apparently, the Amazon plans to sell the device for hundreds less than the iPad. They didn't specify a target price. Basically, it looks like it's going to be a loss leader. You sell the product for less than it costs, and make it up somewhere else.
What type of storage do those have for?
It doesn't. We don't know anything yet.
Well, on the average.
Well, $499 for 16 gigs of storage is the iPad, and most of the competitors. The touchpad was the same price for the same storage, mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of the articles are saying, is that Apple's already got the iTunes store behind it. They've already got the music store, the movie store. For a company to come out at the same price and expect to compete
Can't
is rough.
It.
Yeah, it's got to be low.
But they've got the ecosystem, which is what Apple originally built and proved would work.
Yeah.
Amazon has the ecosystem. They don't have the tablet. They've got a Kindle, but that's not going to do it in this market. So this thing is supposed to be Android 3.2.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to have a 9-inch screen, which is slightly smaller than the 10.1. But there are a lot of people, not Apple fanboys, of course, but a lot of people who will admit that the 10.1-inch screen is just a little unwieldy for most.
Holding it in your hand.
Yeah. But it's certainly significantly bigger than the Tab 7-inch screen. So Amazon is rumored to have two versions of the tablet. Whether they release both of them, we don't know. There's a dual-core model and a quad-core model for the power user. Probably gets 11 minutes of battery life.
I'm still surprised, though, at the low storage.
It's cloud-based.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, for the most part, these tablets, memory, one, is so dirt cheap of any product out there to put in a device.
Well, this is flash storage.
Yeah, it's
which is more expensive.
Yeah, not really.
Well,
they want you to believe that it is because they say so, they can demand the price for it.
I was just looking at a 500 gig SSD, and it was $600-$700.
And so if they're going to bring this out, but remember, the point behind this is, let's say you buy Amazon Music.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to store it locally most of the time. You buy Amazon Books. You don't need to store them locally. You download it, read it, dump it. You know, it's all going to be there in your account for later, and that's what Amazon is planning on. If they'll sell you, let's call it a $200 price point, $199.
And the Kindle is $139, which is they're competing with themselves.
They're competing with themselves, but if they don't care. If they sell this, that'll replace
a Kindle.
As long as you buy something that makes you buy Amazon Books, they win.
Yep.
Right? So you buy an Amazon book, you download it, you read it, you dump it. How much storage do you need? Not much.
Right.
You're going to go on vacation, you're going to take 10, 12 books. That's not even a gig of storage. That's not even a mega storage. So they're a couple of megs a piece, actually. So you can download 1,000 books and still have just a metric buttload of space.
No, what I was thinking of is, you know, like for documents and photos and other stuff that you might want to carry with you.
All Amazon is missing is a photo service.
because
that's what Google's been doing.
But just to go from 16 to 32 gig isn't that much.
Was it? No, it wasn't Flickr.
Well, so it's 16. It was Yahoo. We don't know. He made up a number.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Yeah.
So let's say it's 32 gig.
Yep. That's still.
That's enough.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Even 16 gig really is a lot. And if you've got,
because I've only got 8 in my phone and I haven't filled that up yet.
Right. So if you can do that, if they can do that, they'll bring out, as long as, essentially, as long as it's comparable to the iPad and cheaper. And by comparable, I mean, I know you Apple fanboys are just starting to twitch right now. It's not going to be just as glorious and blessed as the iPad. But as long as people will say, for $200, this is a hell of a tablet, let's buy it. That's going to price off. It's pay off. That decision is based on pricing. The touchpad, way inferior to the iPad in power and software, some will say, but it still sold like gangbusters when the price was right. Imagine a tablet closer to the iPad in specifications, but a lot cheaper. How could it not sell well? And what that means, I think, is everybody's going to benefit, because at some point, if Apple starts losing market share, they're going to lower the price of the iPad. They've had 2 years now to recoup their manufacturing cost. Well, a year. Year and a quarter, year and a little bit to recoup their manufacturing costs. They could drop the price without losing a lot of money. I think this holiday season coming up is going to be the season of the tablet, and I think it's going to be the season of the less expensive tablet.
Wait, we got one. KC here, I only want to jump in here, text us, wanted to know, KC from Rochester wants to know, any word on the iPhone 5 coming with 64 gigabytes?
There's a lot of words. No one knows which ones are true yet. And in fact, it's likely they're all true, and what actually gets marketed is the question. Traditionally, every year, Apple has updated their phone hardware in June, so it's kind of long overdue. The basic speculation is iOS 5 is coming this fall, which they've already shown a bit about and talked about. It would make sense to have the iPhone 5 come out this fall with the iOS 5. So September, October timeframe are what most of the rumors are. And the current pricing is for models with 8 gigs at the low end, and then 32 and 16 and 32. Because the iPod Touch is different. It's 8, 32, 64. And the space used by the radios in the iPhone is used by extra storage in the iPod. So you have to give up a little something to get more storage into it. Are they going to make it thicker? Are they going to make the radio smaller, which probably has been? So over time, all your internal components get smaller, and you can add more storage. But some of that goes back into what we were talking about with the tablets, is you don't need that much local storage with the iCloud services Apple's offering, very similar to the Google and Amazon cloud services, that your music will be on the cloud and you won't need to store it on your own computer. Your videos will be on the cloud. You don't need to store it on your own device. So they don't necessarily need to have a lot of local storage. The big question people often have with local storage and why there's still a 160 gig iPod. It's just the plain iPod. All it does is music, and video and photos, but mostly music. It's for people that have huge music libraries and want to carry that all with them. With the cloud storage, you get 20 gigabytes of storage for $25 a year, and you can buy more for that. So you can have all of your music stored in the cloud. A music you've bought at the Apple iTunes store doesn't count in that total. Just like with Amazon's service, the music you buy at Amazon doesn't count in your storage limits, so that you don't necessarily need a lot of local storage. Back to what Nick says, assuming you're connected to the internet and have an unlimited data plan.
Yeah, but that's where, again, I was asking as far as how much memory is on those things, is like we were talking before, just to step back a second, is if they're going to start throttling and you're going to start paying, granted it's great that it's up there in the cloud and you can get to it wherever you want, but if you're going to start paying for all these downloads and it's going to be eaten up on your data plan, and you're trying to stay within,
I completely agree. That's one of the reasons Google has been looking at their own wireless coverage. And it's Wi-Fi. It's not a cell carrier. But they've been doing that. They're doing some rural area, and then they did, and now they're doing some big city. So we're going to see, I think, more of that sort of thing go on. There's no reason. A lot of towns are actually.
Yeah, until the local ISP sues them for putting in municipal internet.
Well, and that's the point. They start to put in municipal internet, and then the various internet service providers in the area sue them for getting into their business. But they're not doing it at quite the same rate. Or they partner with it like Frontier in Rochester did. So we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. One of the things Steve was just pointing out was the Nook Color, which is $249 or whatever the number is. I've got one. It's a 7-inch Android tablet. It plays Angry Birds. There's a store. You can buy stuff. You can also throw in a particular. There's a hack on the web, and you don't even have to hack the thing. You just throw in an SD card, and it turns it into a real Android tablet. You're going to go back to making it a Nook, pull out that card. Now you're back to a regular Nook again. You don't even have to hack your machine to do that. So, If you want a real Android 7-inch tablet, grab a Nook Color for $250, download this thing onto an SD card, boom, you're done. It's a full, real Honeycomb 3.0.
So you can download the apps tablet. And everything else.
And it works just magnificently. I have used it as both. I use it mostly as a reader because I read voraciously. But when I want to, I pop that chip in, and bang, I've got a 7-inch Android tablet to carry around with all the stuff on it that I want to put on.
A friend of mine got one of the Pan Digital tablets, like $99 at QVC, and I was playing with it, and it's okay for $99. It's not an iPad, but
right.
It's $99. Yeah. And that's the point. Apple, God love them, Steve Jobs has always sold the highest end quality stuff, and some will say catered to the snobbishness of people with a lot of money. But the reality is he's also put out a terrific product. But it's an expensive, terrific product. And there are people who buy a Lexus. There are also people who buy a Taurus, and there are people who buy a Mini Cooper. And so there should be something for everybody there. But I think what Steve Jobs is going to find, well, not him anymore, Tim Cook now, what Apple is going to find is that if someone comes out with something that's, and I won't say as good as, because then I'm going to start getting all kinds of emails.
Stops.
But in the eyes of the average consumer, equivalent enough at the price point. Happy now?
That's been the phrase. It's close enough.
Right, right. And particularly at the price point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what am I willing to lose to save $250?
Yeah. What we really want to see is the cellular carriers come out with family data plans. For those of you that may not remember, back in the olden days, you used to have to buy a minute plan for every phone you had.
Right.
So mom, dad, each of the kids. Then they added family minute plans. So one account for your whole family, and you share a single pool of minutes. With today's smartphones and mobile devices, you're paying a data plan for each device. So if you have an iPhone or an Android phone and a tablet and a computer, you got to have three data plans times mom, dad, each of the kids. So we're really hoping one of the cell phone companies will be first, and then the rest will follow. That they'll make a family data plan. I'm not even sure if I would care that it's not unlimited.
I would care.
Well, I don't have to pay $30 for this device, $30 for this device, and $30 for this device for me and my wife every month. How about $100 or $200? Make it cheaper than I'm paying now, and give me 10 gigs or 20 gigs. is that we don't know how much we're using right now to run right. into that unlimited.
Right.
So
I don't know.
We'll cell phone companies hear us. You know, give us shared data minutes.
Give us unlimited data minutes. Honestly, it's not costing you extra money to have those things there. The radios are already there. The towers are already there.
They just look at it as something more that they can stick us with as far as making more money. Because all they care about is their shareholders.
Nobody's happy with cell phone companies right now.
No, shareholders. I mean, that's all they want to worry about.
Well, and that
and
is
how much
customer.
They can gouge. Yeah, but the thing of it is, though, is third world countries are offering, you know, better plans than us.
The cell carrier shareholders don't care. And as I've said many times, if you're a publicly owned company, your customer is the shareholder. Everybody else is product. Yep. And so we are product for the cell phone companies, and they are selling us to their shareholders, and their shareholders want more value for their shares, which means they have to find a way to dig more money out of us.
Well, and what's interesting is how fragile the cell network seems when it was put to, you know, even the slightest increase in use. When we had the earthquake here last week, a lot of cell service failed in Baltimore and Washington and areas. And now the hurricane is approaching New York, and people are worried about their cell phones again. It seems like everything works fine as long as you don't stress it.
Right. Well, and that comes down to the original problems with the iPhone. When people were saying, oh, the iPhone is a pile of junk. Well, no, what happened was AT&T underestimated how much use the people were going to actually put those iPhones to. When their history tells them we could add another 10 million phones, it won't be a problem. Because all people ever did was make phone calls with them.
And they tried to make short phone calls because they were paying for the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now you're getting unlimited data. Back then, you're getting unlimited data and all these cool apps to play with. Of course you're going to start using them. And the cell phone network then falls apart. And people blamed iPhone because it happened after iPhones came out.
Yep.
But it really wasn't the iPhone. It was AT&T. Underestimating the usage to which people would put the network, and then of course it's compounded when Verizon got the iPhone or the Android phones, and when T-Mobile and et cetera, they already knew what kind of data were coming down the pike, so they were able to pre-beef up their systems.
Yep.
So AT&T looked worse because they had the problem and nobody else did.
Mm-hmm.
And what AT&T blamed it on is local regulations that take 3 years to put a new tower up. We need, you know, we got so many more smartphones, we need more towers. So city council won't let us put more towers up. It takes 3 years to get a tower approved. And right. and especially in the bigger cities. And then what is the big lawsuit now out west? U-verse. AT&T U-verse is their television system.
Right.
Instead of putting ugly wires up or digging trenches, you know, everywhere to run their wires, they're putting little boxes on street corners. Well, not that little, you know, 3 or 4 foot high boxes.
Right.
For neighborhoods to run U-verse. Now they're being sued because people think that they're an eyesore.
Right.
So and we have that around here a lot too, with the electrical box on, you know, the corner of an area that feeds that whole housing development. You can have more time and disruption by digging up more things and laying wires, or you can have, you know, wires strung on poles. So, you know, whatever anyone comes up with, someone's not going to like it.
Yeah, until we have Star Trek,
yep,
we have wires. Get over it. That's one of the ways that Verizon won in Rochester when Frontier closed their cell phone business. They sold it to Verizon. Verizon immediately picked up a whole bunch of cell towers that they hadn't had. They didn't need to get anybody's...
Double or triple the towers they had?
Tripled. Yeah. And so they didn't need to get anybody's permission because they were already there. Yeah. They just took them over. So for many years, I've talked about this before, we had a tower right on campus at RIT, and I could be going down in the elevator talking to my wife on the phone, while my friend who had an AT&T phone would lose the signal in the elevator and would swear loudly at me all the way down. Exactly.
Friendly words.
Exactly. And you could always tell the people who had iPhones, because there were like a little flock of birds all congregating in one corner of the building where they might get a signal while the Verizon people were wandering all over the place.
Go to the light.
It had nothing to do with, exactly, it had nothing to do with how, you know, the relative merits of their networks as such. It had simply to do with the number of towers and the line of sight to those towers and the proximity of those towers. So we're still seeing that as a problem. Sprint just bought Nortel, so they've got that whole push-to-talk thing.
Yeah, but that Sprint service, they got a ways to go in improving that.
That's because they have three separate tower types right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have 4G, 3G, and the push-to-talks. What their president has said is, you know what, I want one radio in every tower. I want it to be a digital box that we can control with software, so I can turn any tower into a 4G tower with the push of a button, any tower into a 3G tower, any tower into a push-to-talk tower,
mm-hmm.
just with the push of a button. So if I have an area where I've got no push-to-talk people, I get a whole bunch of extra 4G towers.
Yep. Makes
That's
sense.
The way to do it. And they're obviously in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
going to
take a couple
time.
Of years yet. But the point is, that makes a lot of sense. But I don't know that what we're going to see in terms of data plans. I hate the idea of paying for my data extra.
Yeah.
I just don't like the idea. It means that I'm going to have to cripple my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to take a bunch of stuff off it because a lot of stuff I use rarely, but it updates all the time. I would pay for those updates. I don't wanna.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just stop using it. Maybe I'll find a carrier that still does unlimited for a while.
Well, that's why I switched from my company to the one that I'm at now, because of the way they were sitting there saying, well, no, you've got to have these many phones, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. And I go, no, I don't want that.
Speaking of phones, there goes yours.
There goes yours. Yours is ringing. Leave it
alone.
You're on the air.
Back to tablets for a minute.
Who's going
to
call you that doesn't? Don't look at your phone. We're on the air.
No, they know. They know.
Yeah.
Yeah. On HP's website, they're still selling the touchpad.
Yeah.
And due to overwhelming demand, it's out of stock at the moment.
But you think?
Notify me. Yeah. Notify me when it's available.
Sign up.
It's been canceled.
Sign up. See how long it takes.
See what the heck. See what happens.
Yeah, but they do have
Let us know how you make out on
they
it.
They have the lower price on it, $99 for the 16-gig version and $150 for a 32-gig version.
Ooh.
I'll go
$150 for a 32.
Yeah.
See, and that's the point. That is the point that Amazon had looked very carefully at that and said, oh, yeah, they just flew off the shelves at that price. And even when there's nothing much you can do with them. If they can bring out an Amazon tablet, an Android tablet for Amazon, that talks to all the Amazon ecosystem at that price, just think how much farther they'll fly off the shelves. And they're going to be a loss leader. They don't have to make money on the tablet because they'll make money on books and music and everything else. All right, we're done for another week. Wake up! We're done! You can go out and do things now. We want to thank you all for listening. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, finishing up our 21st year on the air, right here on the truly great and absolutely magnificent, even though Rob Linton is not listening and won't hear us, Jazz 90.1. George is coming in with German music. You're going to love it.